Well, why don't you tell me about how you got into the service?
Oh, okay.
And what your
Oh, I'll tell you a little bit about Ted first, and that'll clear up the family more or less. Ted was a little. He was about 4 or 5 years younger than Claire. And Ted was pretty good with radios and things like that. He liked electronics, and he would make radios and listen to the shortwave and things like that. When he got out of high school, he decided to go to school with RCA and get a job. And then he finally got a job with RCA, and he worked for them. And in fact, he was in Washington, Atlantic City at the time, working for them when he heard a radio broadcast. He had the radio on, and it was a national thing about this accident where Claire was killed. That's how he heard about it. He heard it over the radio. And he worked for RCA for a while, and then when they sent him all over the world, they sent him to France and Italy and thing, came back, saved a lot of money. Saved quite a bit of money, and when he came back to Lansford, he met a few fellows, and they decided to go into a business here and all that, and the thing flopped. He lost all his money. Kind of devastated him, too, you know, that thing, and it seems like he put up all the money, and the people were going to put up the expertise and things like that, and kind of flopped. Well, anyway, he worked for the television company here, installing the cable company came into being then. He was installing cable and things like sets for people. And then he went into business for himself, repairing television and all that. And he did that for a number of years. And
Ted and his...
Oh, Ted, yeah.
He didn't tend to bill people, or he let them...
Yeah, he would... if he saw a person didn't have any money or something like that, and they needed work done on, so he would fix the thing and all that, and he said, "Well, pay me when you can," or something like that. Well, the first thing you know, his bills became more prevalent than the money he had and all that. He figured, the heck with it, so he closed up his shop, and he started to work for an outfit in Lehigh, the Koch brothers, who sold television, things like that, and he repaired them for them, and he repaired the washers or whatever they need. And he worked there for about 6 or 7 months, and it was around Thanksgiving, and we had dinner next door, and he came over, and I noticed he was talking a little funny. I said, "Ted," I said, "what's wrong?" I said, you're slurring your speech. And he said, "Well, I had a tooth pulled out, a wisdom tooth pulled out of the back," and he said, "maybe they start healing properly or something like that, you know." So Freena Colony was his good friend and all that. So Ted was getting, it seemed like he was getting worse, you know, his speech. So one day Freena got a hold of me. Said, "Let's go down to the doctor." So Freena took him down to the doctor. I was working out the steel, and that he took him down to the doctor, and Dr. McGinley looked at him and diagnosed him immediately as Lou Gehrig's disease. He never told him. Told him to see a specialist in Allentown, and then they confirmed that he had Lou Gehrig's disease. That was right before Thanksgiving of 1 year, and started to get progressively worse, you know. He started to lose feeling in his hands. After a while, he couldn't talk at all, you know. And then he couldn't eat, he couldn't swallow. Everything was starting to bind in his throat, because it hit him in the throat. It hits you in the throat first. And I took him down, and he tried to enlarge the throat a little bit so he could get a little more relief and all that. That worked for a while and all that. And then when he couldn't eat anymore, I took him to Allentown, and they put a tube in his stomach so we could feed him through the stomach and all that. And this was, he worked up until September with Cucks, And then after, he couldn't go to work anymore. He was getting too weak and all. In fact, he used to just, he had a couch right here, and he used to just lay here and did the television there. And he used to just sit here, lay here, and look at the television. And he would be very frustrated. Lou Gehrig's disease attacks all your muscles and nerves and all that, but your mind stays intact. The doctor told me, he said, if there was ever a disease that was devised by the devil, it's Lou Gehrig's disease. And you can't much comfort him, you know, a person like that. You know, when he's, something's terminal, what do you keep telling the person? You know, you're going to be all right, or you're going to be better tomorrow, or something like that. So he would get frustrated with me sometimes when I would try to cheer him up or something like that, and he said, write down on the paper, he couldn't talk to me, he'd write down, I have ALS, you know, as if to say, hey, who are you trying to kid, you know, if I would. So he said, I have ALS, and it was right around before Christmas and all that. There was a program by Charlie Wiedemeyer. Charlie Wiedemeyer was a good football player in the University of Hawaii, or on the Hawaiian Islands, and then he went to Mount St. Mary's, and they made a movie of him. He had ALS. And I saw it on television, it listed and all that, and I said, oh, good, I hope he doesn't watch that, you know. And I didn't even come over that night, and then when I just peeped in, he had the door open, I peeped in, and sure, he was watching it and all that, and then it was kind of a sad thing, you know, where a body could deteriorate with this disease. So we had the tube put in his stomach, and we were feeding him that way, but he was getting worse. He would just gag here, and it was kind of heartbreaking, because everything would just catch in his throat. He couldn't spit up or anything like that. And this Dr. Strauss in Allentown, who was treating him and all that, suggested maybe we get a ventilator for him so he could breathe a little better. So the night, it was a Thursday night, I came over here, and he said he was going to take a bath, and I said, I'll see you in the morning. We were going to drive down to Allentown, get this ventilator, and the next morning, he used to leave the door open for me so I could get in, you know, the back door. And I couldn't get in the back door. I had a key for the front door, so I went over and got the key for the front door. And, well, I looked up and I saw the lights on, you know. And then when I went up the stairs, he was, got out of bed and never made it, just died right on the floor. He just dropped over. And he was dead about 4 hours before I found him. But that was the end of Ted, you know. It was, in a way, it was kind of a blessing, because he, like I said, your mind is perfect, your eyes are perfect, you can read everything else, but you know you can't swallow, you can't, you know.
You lose the use of other muscles.
Yeah, well, the hands too. He got to the point where he would try to write, you know, and he couldn't grasp the pencil properly, and all of a sudden he'd get frustrated. Everything would go off the table, you know, the pencils, the paper, and everything else was on it, you know, and then I would have to, you know, pick it up and all that. But that was the end of my brother.
Now, was that about how long after your sister's death was his death?
After he died before Rose died.
Did he die before
Claire? Oh, no, he died about... it was about 5 years, 6 years maybe, yeah. But Rose was still living.
Both of them died before your mother?
Yes. Not Ted.
Ted was after?
Yeah. The only one that died before my mother was Claire. And then the rest died afterwards, yeah. And then my father, he died in 1974. He died in... Ted was still alive then. In fact, Ted had just seen him down at Gnadenhutten Hospital. He was in a chair, and it was in February. It snowed pretty well the night before, because I had stopped in from Bethlehem on the way home, And I remember him telling me, he said, you better get on home. It's snowing out there. He said, you're going to, you know, get, you know, the roads and all that. He said, go on home. So I stayed there a while, went home. Ted went down the next day and talked to him for a while. And he said he was tired and felt a little sleepy and all that. So Ted came home. And by the time he got home, he got a phone call. Ted never had a phone here. They called next door, and the person said that, you know, my father died that quick. But he died in his, more or less, in the chairs, you know. And he was 89. And like I said, never complained or anything like
considering
that.
Considering that he had black lungs.
Black lungs.
It's remarkable to live.
It's a funny thing, though, about the black lung, Tom. Through the years, he used to like to walk a lot, you know. And through the years, from the time he was 65 to the time he was 80, his lungs seemed to be better. I mean, he didn't wheeze as much, you know, not near as much. But in the beginning, like down in the basement and all that, when he would spit up, it would be, you know, it would be horrible. I mean, all this black stuff and all that, and he would gag almost like Ted was gagging when he had the Lou Gehrig's. Not quite as bad as the Lou Gehrig's, but he would, you know, to get all this stuff up and all that. But he did like to walk, and he would get out every morning and all that and walk down around, up through the woods, up in the back, up around the store there, up in the mountains, and come back. And he had a routine. He was in bed every night at 9 o'clock. So, you know,
so you figure he actually got somewhat healthier.
I think so.
In retirement.
I think so. I was talking to Sabrin the other day, too, and he said, he has black lung, but it's not, you know, it's not really that, you know, like some, like Polly Petrish when he had it, you know, he couldn't, or Gimbo or something like that. They really had it bad. But Sabrin doesn't, his black lung, but he doesn't breathe hard, you know, he doesn't pant like some of them do. Yeah.
And he also does a lot to kind of stay in shape.
That's true, you know, and I guess a lot of it has to do with what kind of your makeup you have, what kind of genes you have, I guess, to how you combat all this disease and other things like black lung. I saw people like Polly Petrish. This is going ahead, but you know, it seems like one year he was perfectly healthy, and the next year he was dead. You know, and it was all, you know, that quick. We might think it's quick. You don't ever know to them how they must. It's a buildup of all this dust and